So the text for today comes from Exodus 3, and we read part of it twice already really recently. So I'm going to, Mark, if you could jump to, I think Nicole left off at verse 13. So we'll pick up right there. Yeah, perfect. Moses said to God, "Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'What is his name?' Then what shall I tell them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites: 'I am has sent me to you.'" God also said to Moses, "Say to the Israelites, 'The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob,'" if you can picture him still standing here, "he has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation. Go, assemble the elders of Israel and say to them, 'The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, appeared to me and said, I have watched over you and have seen what has been done to you in Egypt. And I have promised to bring you up out of your misery in Egypt into the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey. The elders of Israel will listen to you. Then you and the elders are to go to the king of Egypt and say to him, 'The Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. Let us take a 3-day journey into the wilderness to offer sacrifices to the Lord our God.' But I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless a mighty hand compels him. So I will stretch out my hand and strike the Egyptians with all the wonders that I will perform among them. After that, he will let you go. And I will make the Egyptians favorably disposed towards this people, so that when you leave, you will not go empty-handed. Every woman is to ask her neighbor and any woman living in her house for articles of silver and gold and for clothing, which you will put on your sons and daughters, and so you will plunder the Egyptians." So as I was saying, God called Moses in a pretty crazy way through a burning bush. But I think sometimes we get caught up in the wrong element of this crazy calling. Let me just say, it's not about the bush. Again, it's important to know the context of what we read. And part of the context is knowing where it takes place and what was normal for that time. When God called Moses, he was living in Midian, which is a hot, dry desert. So it was not uncommon for a bush to spontaneously ignite into flames. It wasn't the fact that the bush was burning that caught his attention. Moses declared that the strange sight was that the bush did not burn up. It was something different in the midst of something normal. God used a very ordinary thing with an extraordinary element to call Moses. He used the supernatural within the natural to draw him in. And he used his presence in the midst of common circumstances. Although God doesn't always use a burning bush to call us, he has actually never used a burning bush for me, he does, though, use the same pattern of using something strange in the midst of something normal to draw us in. Sometimes this comes in a flashy, direct way, like it did for Moses in the bush. But honestly, though, I think that what God was calling Moses into, that massive task, a burning bush was very appropriate. But Moses only had one burning bush, and the Lord called him to many different things. Many times God's calling comes in a gentle stirring, a sudden shift in your spirit, an unexpected, unexplainable peace. Quiet, but sure. I first felt called into some sort of women's ministry at a Women of Faith conference in 2008. It was one of the many women's conferences I've been to. That was the common part. But as I sat at this conference, I had this strange, strong, confident word come to my heart. This is what I want to do. Connecting women with God and with each other. No burning bush, no flashy sign, but a sense of surety that I could not explain or deny. The timing was not yet, as I had two tiny kiddos, but the certainty was palpable. God called Moses to lead his people out of slavery in Egypt in such an extravagant way that Moses had to be sure that it was God's calling. But as sure as he was that God was calling him, he still struggled with questions, hesitations, fears. And I don't think that he was unique in this, these hesitations and questions and fears. The enemy would love to derail every one of God's people from answering his call. He doesn't hesitate to plant thoughts of doubt in our hearts, to nudge us to dwell on these thoughts, to distract us to the point of completely neglecting what we know to be true. I certainly experienced this in my calling to the women's discipleship ministry at this church. Moses struggled with questions, hesitations, and fears, but God was so patient with him, so faithful to answer his questions, overcome his hesitations, and silence his fears. There are several things that we can learn from God's response to Moses, things that are not unique to Moses' situation, things that I believe that God does for all those that he calls. Five particular things that stand out to me that I'd like to share with you this morning. The first thing that stands out to me is that he develops and ignites my passions when he calls me. I think that sometimes that we fear God will call us into something that we will hate. But I would argue that at the root of every calling is a passion that he has developed, sometimes quickly and sometimes over the course of years. When you take a look at the life of Moses and you remember the reason that Moses fled for the desert, because he murdered an Egyptian slave master for treating an Israelite slave poorly. 40 years before God called Moses to lead the Israelites out of slavery, he began to develop a passion in Moses. Moses hated that the Israelites were being treated unjustly, and he saw this injustice enacted. Although his action of killing somebody was not in line with God's will, the passion that was behind it was. Even when Moses was physically removed from his people, his passion remained for 40 years. It wasn't quite 40 years for me, but in the years between that initial pull that I felt into women's ministry at that Women of Faith conference, God developed my passion for women. Outside of taking care of my kiddos, I spent a lot of time working with an organization called MOPS, which is Mothers of Preschoolers, out at Covenant Church just down the road. I started off as a discussion group leader and moved into a place on the leadership team and began in that place doing some teaching and speaking. All the while, my passion for ministering to the hearts of women continued to grow, and my desire to connect these women with God and these women with each other increased. The passions were there, just waiting for the next call. In that moment with the bush, God reignited this passion that was already there in Moses. He reminded Moses of his passion with these words. The Lord said, "I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt." Remember? "I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers." Remember? "And I'm concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the land of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey." He spoke these words, And then he called Moses. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. God developed his passion. He ignited his passion, and then he called him to act on this passion. When God calls us into something, he develops and ignites our passion for it. I'm not saying that everything he calls us to is enjoyable. For instance, when I'm called to speak out against an injustice, I don't necessarily enjoy it, but I do feel passionate about justice. When Moses was called to free the Israelites, he wasn't necessarily excited about it, but it was in line with the passion that God had placed inside of him. Sometimes, like Moses, we just need a little reminder, a reigniter of that passion. The second thing that I learned from this, that God does for me when he calls me, is that he makes me worthy. The first question that Moses asks God is, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" He immediately questions his worthiness. You see, when Moses was in Egypt, he thought he was sure of who he was, a prince of Egypt, a Hebrew. But now 40 years later, he's completely humbled. He lives as a foreigner. Doesn't even own the sheep he's looking after. It's his father-in-law's. And he questions who he is. I get this, and I'm sure that you do too. When I felt clearly called to apply for the position here, I struggled with these same feelings. I went for a run to clear my head and hear from the Lord. And as I ran, my mind was plagued with things like, "You're not qualified to do this. You've never gone to school for ministry training. You're a math teacher. Who do you think you are?" Isn't that just like the enemy, to distract us with our own insufficiencies, to consume our minds with our inadequacies? But I love God's response to him. "I will be with you." God didn't spend the next 5 minutes giving Moses a pep talk about how great Moses truly was. He reminded Moses of his presence with him. He was gently calling Moses to shift his focus from himself to God. It's not your accomplishments, certifications, or qualifications that make you worthy. It is his presence with you that makes you worthy. Moses' second question was much more appropriate. He asked, "Who should I say sent me?" Not, "Who am I?" but, "Who is God?" And God's response was fantastic. "I am who I am, the great I am." God has so many names that he revealed to different people over the course of time. But this name, the great I am, illustrates the eternal nature of God. He is. There was never a time that he wasn't, and there will never be a time that he does not exist. He just is, always. And so much confidence comes in knowing this of God, of who he is. When we focus on his ever-presence, his faithfulness, his power, we can't help but feel confident that his presence will never leave us and will carry us. Casting Crowns put it best in their song, "Not because of who I am, but because of what you've done. Not because of what I've done, but because of who you are." We can struggle to no avail against feelings of unworthiness when God has called me. Or we can listen to the voice of the enemy, we can listen to the voice of the enemy reminding us of our lack, or we can recognize that he makes me worthy. Not who am I, who is God? It is God who makes me worthy. The third thing is that he positions and equips me. From Moses' birth, you can see God's hand in setting him apart and positioning him for what he would call him to. As I shared earlier, Moses was born at a time where the Israelite babies were killed at birth, but God spared him. And then not only did he spare him, but he placed him under the motherhood of Pharaoh's daughter. He was in Pharaoh's family. This position set him up for God's calling. After God called Moses, he equipped him for the task. If you read the rest of the chapter and on into the next chapter, you can see all the ways that God equipped him. turning his staff into a snake and then back to a staff, turning his hand leprous and then healing it, turning water from the Nile into blood. God gave Moses the tools to do what he called him to do. Many times we have no idea that we are in the midst of God's positioning and equipping. We're just doing life. I did MOPS because I'm an extreme extrovert and I was a stay-home mom. I needed space to connect with people. And in the process of meeting this need for community, God began to build skills in me that would be useful in later ministry. He gave me tools that seemed very situation-specific at the time, but have become an asset to successful ministry. I was in a time of equipping and I had no idea. I'm of the opinion that we are constantly in a place of being equipped. That God is using our circumstances in every moment to position and prepare us for what is next. And I wonder how differently we would respond to our circumstances if we had this kingdom perspective as we face them. I'm not a giant fan of cliches, but sometimes they say it all. This one, God does not call the equipped. He equips the called. God positions and equips us for what he calls us to. The fourth thing is that he does not relent. Even after being equipped with these three great signs from God, Moses was still struggling against God's call. He told God he was not good with words. And then God reminded Moses that it was he who gave him his mouth, and it will be he who gives him his words. Then Moses goes straight for the jugular. Send somebody else. And at this point, God starts getting a little bit angry with him. But he did not relent. He said that he would send Moses' brother Aaron with him. That Aaron would be the mouthpiece. You can read God's relentless pursuit of Moses all over this passage. For every question, God had an answer. For every hesitation, God had a solution. For every fear, God showed his faithfulness. God called Moses and he relentlessly pursued Moses until he responded in obedience. The fifth thing is that he provides the way and confirms his call. Once Moses decided to obey God's calling, the ball started rolling. God went before Moses and laid the way for him. God followed through with all of his promises to Moses that we have read. He called Aaron to be by his side, and the Israelite leaders believed them, just as he said. Moses was given power to perform the signs before Pharaoh, and then God sent plagues, as he said he would. Pharaoh finally relented and let the Israelites go. Even after they escaped Egypt, God continued to go before Moses and the Israelites in a cloud by day and in fire by night. God provided the way for what he called Moses to do. And in his great grace, he confirmed his call to Moses. In verse 12, it says, "This will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain." It was not an easy road for Moses and the Israelites. But when it was all said and done, they worshiped God on that mountain, just as God said. It was a sweet confirmation to Moses that he was in God's will. And if you know anything about what happened from there, you know that the sweet confirmation was very necessary, a boost for the future hardships that they would endure in the 40 years in the desert. When God calls us, he develops and ignites our passions. He makes us worthy. He positions and equips us. He does not relent, and he provides the way and confirms his calling. Our response is very simple. Listen, first of all. The interesting thing about Moses' interaction with God in the burning bush is that God did not speak to Moses until he had his attention. In verse 4, it says, "When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, 'Moses, Moses.'" God's relentless pursuit of his people begins with catching our attention. And the closer we walk with him, the sooner we see him. The more familiar we are with his voice, the easier it is for us to hear him call. In our hectic, busy society, listening is sometimes the last thing that we like to do, even in our interactions with God. But if we are not listening, we cannot hear his call. Then we have to receive the passions he places in our hearts, receive our worth from him, receive all that he offers to equip us, receive the provision he gives, receive his grace and sweet confirmation, and receive his calling. And last but not least, we have to obey. Listen, receive, obey. It seems so simple when you say it, but in practicality, it can be so difficult. Because many times, it's not a one and done deal. Many times, it's a one step at a time deal. We have to keep our ears listening for what's next. We have to continually receive our passions, worth, equipping, and provision, and then obey again. This is exactly what Moses experienced. He had to keep listening, receiving, and obeying to cross the Red Sea, to feed the starving Israelites, to give them water, and so much more. Listen, receive, obey. Check. Listen, receive, obey. He is faithful. He is faithful. So we continue to listen, receive, and obey. The question that plagues many of us as we look at this is, when is God calling? And the answer is, yes. God is always calling us. From big major things like job changes, geographical moves, to seemingly small things like having a difficult conversation or giving money to his work, God is calling you. Will you listen, receive, and obey? Let's pray. God, thank you so much for your word. Thank you for the way that it comes alive to us. Thank you for the fact that this story is one part of the larger and greater story. Thank you for what you teach us about how you are when you call us, that you don't just shout out to us and leave us, but you are with us through it all. I pray, God, that you would help us to hear from you, help us to listen, help us to receive, and help us to follow through in obedience. We love you, God, and pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.